You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. As of yesterday, the more contagious Delta variant of the coronavirus now makes up 83% of cases in the United States. This is according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. CDC officials say this is a 50% increase from the week of July 3rd, with health officials saying this variant is more transmissible than any other variant identified so far. And on top of that, on Monday, the American Academy of Pediatrics came out against the CDC's recommendation of making mask wearing optional in schools, saying schools need to enforce universal masking mandates for all students and staff, since so many children won't be protected by fall. And schools have no way of verifying COVID vaccine status as of yet. Joining us today to talk about all of this and answer your questions are Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, as well as a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, Dr. Stephen Nimmerson, the Chief Clinical Officer for St. Alphonsus Health System, and Dr. Bart Hill, St. Luke's Vice President and Chief Quality Officer. I want to thank all of you for joining us today.
Thanks, Gemma.
Nice to be here with you.
And if you do have questions for our doctors, you can send those to us through an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. So I'd like to start by talking about a news conference that happened yesterday. Idaho Department of Health and Welfare Director Dave Jeppesen said during this news conference that the overall state of COVID-19 numbers here in our state has taken a turn for the worse in the past few weeks. In fact, if we look at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, 49% of eligible Idahoans have received at least one vaccine dose, but that's compared to 65.6% of all eligible Americans. And Idaho actually has the fifth lowest share of residents age 12 and up who were at least partially vaccinated. Dave Jeppesen also stated that we're seeing increases in ICU admittance. So Dr. Hill and Dr. Nimmerson, I would like to talk about what you're seeing at your two hospitals. Dr. Nimmerson, can we start with you? What are things looking like at St. Alphonsus right now?
Thanks, Gemma. Happy to share the accurate information that we have. And yes, our experience is consistent with the state of Idaho's and what's going on throughout the United States. So we had seen a nice steady decline in the prevalence of COVID in our communities. And as a result, a very significant decrease in the number of hospitalized patients with COVID. Ending about 2 weeks ago, we've gotten to the point where the number of patients with COVID within all of our hospitals numbered less than five. And over the past 2 to 4 weeks, we've seen that number climb. Now we're running around a dozen, which doesn't seem like a lot, but we've been through this before, and it's very clear that we're at the beginning of a new surge. The other thing that we're seeing is that there's been a significant shift in what we call the demographic or the age group and the types of people who are getting sick with COVID. They're almost entirely unvaccinated. That's not a surprise. However, they're younger. Our average age of a COVID patient when we had our previous surge was in the 60s to 70s. Now it's in the 50s, and that means a larger number of people under the age of 50. And in fact, the youngest patient that we've seen hospitalized with COVID recently was in their early 20s. So there's a shift to a younger population of unvaccinated people. And sadly, the progression of the disease seems to be a little bit faster. It was previously consistent with what is being seen nationally among the different strains of COVID, that somebody would get sick at home, it would take them about a week to require hospitalization, and then it would take them some number of days, 3-5 days, before they ended up so sick that they ended up in an intensive care unit. That progression seems to be a little bit faster, although the numbers are so small that I can't tell you that with absolute certainty. That's, however, been our experience recently.
And Dr. Hill, what are you seeing at St. Luke's?
Yeah, Gemma, thanks. At St. Luke's, we're seeing a very similar pattern to what St. Alphonsus is seeing and Dr. Nimmerson has described. Early July, we were across our whole health system seeing about 20 COVID patients a day in our inpatient units. And that's, this morning was up to 46, and it's been rising since early July. Our ICU has doubled the number of COVID patients. This morning we had 10 COVID patients in the ICU. In early July, about 2% of our inpatient population was COVID, and it's now up to 6%. So we too are seeing that same trend. And I just believe that this is going to mirror what was seen in India with the Delta variant, what was seen in Missouri, and what is starting to be seen in our surrounding states of Wyoming, Montana, Utah, and Nevada, where the Delta variant is up to 30% of the variant that's being identified.
And Dr. Nemerson, you know, you suggested that this is the start of a new surge. I know that both St. Alphonsus and St. Luke's decided to mandate that all employees be vaccinated. Dr. Nemerson, there has been some pushback about this. Can you talk about that decision to mandate this?
Happy to do so. And believe me, it's not an easy decision to require that our employees be vaccinated, but the fundamental trust that our patients have in St. Alphonsus Health System is that they're going to be safe when they're cared for within our facilities. And I just want to create the picture of someone who is unvaccinated that has a higher risk of acquiring the virus with a higher viral load, taking care of a patient, doing a physical exam in direct contact with that patient. And I don't care if they're wearing a space suit. I don't think that our patients want that provider to be unvaccinated and potentially harboring this virus. So that's a fundamental concern of ours, is protecting our patients' well-being and safety. The second thing is that we want to protect our colleagues themselves, and we want to make sure that they are healthy and able to come to work. And you've heard some description about this terrible Delta variant that's out there now, and so we want to make sure that our colleagues are at the lowest risk possible of acquiring that variant and getting sick from it. So that's a second thing. The science behind the vaccine is profound. This is the safest vaccine ever produced. It's been administered to hundreds of millions of people in the United States with minimal, if any, complications. And then finally, it's been administered in one form or another to over a billion people worldwide. So it's not this experimental thing that people talk about. It is proven safe and effective. And the last thing, Gemma, is this is the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do to protect ourselves. It's the right thing to do to protect each other. Here at St. Alphonsus, we have a mission to be the partner for life to patients. And part of that is the sacred trust that we have with those patients and their families. So with all of that being said, we understand the angst that people have. We understand the misinformation that's out there. We understand the emotion behind all of this. And I personally have had many, many individual conversations with employees that are torn over this, to give them the accurate information so that they can make an educated decision, which is very clear: get the vaccine.
Dr. Hill, anything that you would like to add in regards to St. Luke's decision to do this? Because I will make the assumption that it's very similar as to why St. Al's made their decision.
Gemma, it is very similar, and we too did not come to this decision lightly. It was several months of lots of discussion, review of the evidence, and an awareness that our highest priority is safety. And it's safety for our patients, it's safety for our staff, and in a small way, to contribute to the safety of our community. And when you have a vaccine-preventable disease that has the potential to have long-term consequences, even death, among our patients and our staff, and we have lost staff to COVID already, it became just inconsistent with that priority, that purpose, to not mandate this vaccine, knowing that people were going to have very strong feelings and that it may not be the right place for everybody because of that decision. But like St. Alphonsus, that was really the foundation of our decision, as well as the efficacy and the safety of the vaccine.
I want to read something that French President Emmanuel Macron came out with. It's getting some attention around the world. So I'm quoting him. He says, quote, "I no longer have any intention of sacrificing my life, my time, my freedom, and the adolescence of my daughters, as well as their right to study properly, for those who refuse to be vaccinated. This time, you stay at home, not us." He went on to say, "We cannot make those who have the civic sense to get vaccinated bear the burden of inconvenience. The restrictions will weigh on others, those who, for reasons incomprehensible in the country of Louis Pasteur, science and the Enlightenment still hesitate to use the only weapon available against the pandemic, the vaccine," unquote. What he then announced, that in France, those who do not get vaccinated, you will no longer be able to go to restaurants or cafes starting at the beginning of August. You cinemas and museums, you can't go to starting today. You cannot get on airplanes or trains beginning in August. And I'm curious about this, because I am sure there is pushback on this. But how concerned are you as medical professionals that this is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated, yet the vaccinated are bearing the burden? And Dr. Pate, I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, Jim, I think you've actually said it quite well. We are dealing with a couple different pandemics in many different regards, but what we are seeing happening right now is that there is a large degree of protection for those that get vaccinated, though it's not perfect, but it is a large degree of protection. And then what we're seeing, as Drs. Nimmerson and Hill just related, the people who are getting severely ill, who are being admitted to our hospitals, and who are going on ventilators and that are dying, are overwhelmingly those that have been unvaccinated. And, you know, I think the President Macron makes some very important points, is that, you know, there's all this discussion about personal liberties and so forth. Yet when I talk to many of those people, they want their liberties at the expense of others who, for example, I have a family member who has a very severe immunodeficiency. She can't go out because people who are unwilling to get vaccinated and pose a lethal risk to her won't get vaccinated. And so what we're seeing is our young children who aren't eligible to be vaccinated are now at risk. Those who have been vaccinated but have underlying immunodeficiencies or immunocompromise, those people are having to restrict their lives because of this. I remember last year, people actually telling me, why don't we just lock up the old people in their homes and let everybody else get back to their business? Well, you know, frankly, I haven't talked to a whole lot of quote unquote old people that just want to stay locked up in their house and never see their grandkids or never go to the grocery store or never get their hair done. And I think this, I think what the French president brings out is, you know, we've really allowed this discussion to get twisted to, well, it's about preserving the rights of people who live in a society, gain the benefits of that society, but are not willing to make any compromise themselves for the good of that society.
Beginning of the program, we talked about the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendation that children wear masks this school year. In fact, they came out with a statement on Monday saying the AAP recommends universal masking because a significant portion of the student population is not yet eligible for vaccines, and masking is proven to reduce transmission of the virus and to protect those who are not vaccinated, the AAP wrote. Now, they went on to say many schools will not have a system to monitor vaccine status of students, teachers, and staff, and some communities overall have low vaccination uptake where the virus may be circulating more prominently. I'd like to hear from all three of you. Dr. Pate, I want to start with you because There has already been massive pushback on this idea. Yet as a mother to a nine-year-old who cannot yet be vaccinated, it's frankly scary to think about the beginning of the school year.
Well, it is, Gemma, and I share that concern. As I mentioned, in trying to understand what we might be in for the school year, I look at a couple of different things. I look at what's happening in other parts of the world that got to predominance of the Delta variant before we did, and what happened with their schools. And a very important difference was that whereas last year we did not see infections in our schools spill over significantly into the community, those other countries are telling us with Delta, that is exactly what they see. The second thing that I have looked at is what's most analogous to school that we can look at now. So I've looked at summer camps. And I thought, well, you know, if summer camps go swimmingly, then pardon the pun, then maybe school will be okay. But in fact, we had some really huge outbreaks in a camp in Texas, infecting a third of the camp, in a camp in Illinois, affecting over 85 people. So significant spread, more than we're used to seeing. And then the CDC issued a study that looked at a gymnastics facility in Oklahoma where they were having gymnastics activities with kids. And what they saw there, similarly, was a big outbreak. And what they measured is that having a case in that facility meant an attack rate of 20%. In other words, that with somebody getting infected there, 20% of those people at the facility got infected. Then they look to see what about the transmission from these kids to their families. Because last year, you'll recall discussions that, well, we didn't think kids were as likely to get infected. If they did get infected, they weren't likely to get sick. And if they did get infected, they weren't likely to spread it. Well, Delta is very different, and kids definitely can get infected, and kids definitely can spread this. And what they saw was the attack rate in their households was 53%. Again, much higher than what we saw last year. So even if people are dismissive about measures to be taken in schools because kids generally do well, kids generally don't get very sick, those are two true statements to our knowledge. However, the concern is we have here in Idaho so many unvaccinated parents in their 30s and 40s. And you just heard Dr. Nimmerson talking about the people in his hospital. They're in that age group. And in fact, while we tend to think of them as being very healthy, many do have significant underlying health conditions, and I talk to a lot of them. And so that's our risk. I think that people who are vaccinated are going to continue to do well. However, we have to realize that in our schools, the majority of people will be unvaccinated. And what we did last year when we had vaccines for teachers coming online is we took some time to allow those teachers to get vaccinated. And the question is, why won't we do the same thing for kids? And so I think we're in for potentially a challenge. And I'll say one last thing. A lot of people think, I don't want kids to be in school. That is wrong. I want kids to be in school. I know that is the best thing for them from a learning standpoint, but I don't want to be foolish about this. If we're going to have all the kids back and give up our mitigation strategies, and I hear some of these school leaders say, oh, well, while we won't be doing masks and distancing, we will be taking other mitigation measures like cleaning hands and cleaning surfaces. And I'm like, my God, we're 16 months into this, and these people still don't know how this virus is spread. And so it's ridiculous. And so my concern is, if we just bring all these kids back, and if that attack rate is 20 to 30%, we're going to have mass outbreaks in schools, and everybody's going to go be going back to remote.
Mm-hmm. And I will say this as a mom, not as a journalist, is that I believe that children bore so much of the burden these last 16 to 18 months, children having to go remote, children wearing masks to protect adults. And yet now we are sending some kids to the wolves, it feels like, in a way. With that said, I was having a conversation with my children's pediatrician just yesterday, asking her recommendation for what I should do in regards to my 9-year-old who cannot yet be vaccinated. Her suggestion is that we do mask him inside until he can be vaccinated when he heads back to school. She also noted that the Children's Hospital at St. Luke's is filling up again with kiddos. She said, no, not necessarily just COVID, but all of these respiratory issues that they haven't seen for the last year and a half. And Dr. Hill, that too can be causing issues. I mean, we were masked, we weren't seeing the flu, we weren't seeing things like RSV. And now we're kind of having this, it seems like this influx of kiddos getting sick again.
Yeah, Gemma, that's absolutely correct. And it's not just the kiddos who didn't see RSV or influenza last year. It's adults with chronic diseases. It's that pent-up healthcare demand that people put off that is contributing to a huge surge in the volumes at both St. Alphonsus and St. Luke's. And when you put on top of that the additional burden of an increasing group of patients with COVID, it is really stretching our staff and our resources to its limits. And that's what we feel we're kind of on a razor's edge in terms of how close are we to really being at a point that we may not be able to provide all the services necessary for our communities.
And Dr. Nemerson, are you concerned, or how concerned, I guess, are you in regards to this potential surge happening? And here we are, a lot of kids go back to school August 16th. I realize I'm a mom and I'm hyper worried. So take that into account, but it feels like a perfect storm in a way happening.
Well, of course we're concerned, Gemma, and I'm concerned personally. I'm a pediatric intensive care physician, and I always think about it in the single patient perspective and the single parent or parents and family perspective. You know, first of all, in the schools, peer pressure is huge. And the idea that we've set a situation up where somebody who feels they want to protect themselves, a child no less, is going to walk into school with their face covered when so many around them are not going to be covered. And that peer pressure to take off that mask when it's ill-advised, I just can't even imagine. And then the idea then that one of those children may be vulnerable because of an undisclosed to their friends, hidden illness, immunocompromise, cancer, any of these sorts of things. And they have to be subject to the ridicule that's going to occur. That's just not right. And the last thing I'll say is I've taken care of kids who have multi-system inflammatory syndrome, which is this rare complication of COVID that can kill children. And it is exceedingly rare, but it's not zero. And to your point about, and Dr. Pate's statistical information about the risk here, I think one death is just too much when we're talking about being able to prevent that by simple face covering. So we really should be reflecting very deeply upon our community and the community that's present in school and what's really best practice.
Yeah, I would wonder what parent would be willing to sacrifice their child. A study was published by the Lancet Medical Journal, I believe yesterday. It was led by a staffer at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. And researchers estimated that 1.1 million children globally lost a parent or a custodial grandparent due to COVID-19 from March of 2020 to April of 2021. The study went on to estimate that the United States, India, Brazil, and Mexico, these are four countries with fairly high coronavirus death rates, have especially severe orphanhood issues, with more than 100,000 children in each country losing a primary caregiver to the virus. Dr. Pate, I bring this up because there was an argument out there that says children are not affected that much by COVID. Maybe they're not. But you can't tell me this isn't an effect of it.
Well, absolutely, Gemma. And you may remember I brought up a point about this some time ago on your show that, you know, we're not having balanced discussions. So we talk about the mental health impacts on children because of last year and how it worked. And I don't deny that at all. And I don't think that's inconsequential or not a serious matter. But if we're going to have an educated discussion, we have to look at the entirety of the issue, because there are also psychological issues for children who get COVID. And there's been a study that's come out about all the high percentage of new psychiatric conditions in the 6 months after COVID. So we have to be concerned about that. Some kids will get long COVID and be very significantly impaired by that and associated psychological issues. And there's this issue that if you looked in the United States, you were giving those numbers, 75,000 of those were the loss of the father. And I think about 30,000 were loss of the mother. And we know how important mothers and fathers are to the lives and development of children. But also, you're talking about in single parent families, where now that child may be orphaned. You may be talking about a situation where the parent that died was the breadwinner, and now that child is being reduced to poverty. Also, what kind of psychological issue is there if you're the child that comes home, brings COVID, and it ends up making one of your parents extremely ill or killing? So we're just not having a very thorough, robust discussion. And I think these points have been glossed over for far too long.
We will have psychological impacts of this pandemic for many years to come. We are going to get to your questions now, but do remember that this is for informational purposes only. Be sure to be, you know, having these conversations with your primary medical doctors as well. With that said, John from Boise sent us this question just today. He wants to know, could a dozen seniors sit together safely in a restaurant for a two-hour meeting? Dr. Hill, how would you answer that?
Well, the first question I'd want to know is all 12 in sitting in that restaurant vaccinated or not? Second question is just the realization that you're indoor and there are going to be other people, servers, people next to you who may not be vaccinated, could be infected, and could be contagious. And so it's a relative safety. I think if everybody is vaccinated, you have reduced that risk quite a bit. If you could be outdoors, it'd be preferred to being indoors. But it certainly is a risk just because we don't have a single intervention that's 100% effective at preventing this disease. The vaccine is our best tool, but it's not 100%. So it's a relative safety question, I guess.
Dr. Nemerson, Tiffany sent this in. She says, how much protective immunity do you think still exists in Idaho as a result of people having had and recovered from COVID? Also, I assume this number will change as time goes on and natural immunity fades.
Gemma, the fact is that natural infection from COVID doesn't protect against future infection from COVID, particularly with this Delta variant that we've been talking so much about this afternoon. So in the broad sense, immunity is gone, as far as I'm concerned. And then as far as the idea of, well, natural immunity fades over a period of time, what we also know is that the COVID vaccine is showing more effectiveness against both the original strain of COVID and the new mutant strains. And as a result, we believe that the protection from the COVID vaccine is sustained longer than it is from having had COVID itself. obviously, the combination is probably the very best, and the recommendation from the CDC, the ACIP, which is the CDC's Advisory Council on Immunization, and others, is if you've had COVID, get vaccinated. And there's a strong suggestion that if you've had COVID and get vaccinated, your immune protection is even greater than somebody who never had COVID and gets vaccinated. But I will also say that certainly do not go out and get COVID to try and protect yourself from a future infection, which is a silly thing that I've heard some people talking about, and we would never advise to do something silly like that.
Dr. Pate, can you talk about these breakthrough cases of COVID that we're seeing with people who are fully vaccinated? I ask because I do think that once again, this brings up people's hesitancy around getting the vaccine.
Yeah, well, I can certainly talk about it, Jim, and let me get to the bottom line. The vaccines aren't perfect, so we are going to have some breakthrough cases. However, if you gave me a choice, do I want to have COVID without being vaccinated or COVID with having been vaccinated, I will go for being vaccinated every time. So I certainly the fact that some people have breakthrough cases should not be a discouragement. In fact, I think what you heard from Dr. Hill and Dr. Nemison earlier, and is what we're observing all across the country, is that the people that are in the hospital are not vaccinated by and large. It is overwhelmingly unvaccinated people, which is just another sign of how effective these vaccines are. Now, with that said, let's talk about the breakthroughs. Number one, we don't know the full extent of breakthrough infections. The national reporting that the CDC does really only looks to people who have breakthrough infections who have been hospitalized or die. They're not looking at all breakthrough infections. However, what we are fairly clear about is that if you are fully vaccinated and you do have a breakthrough infection, it is overwhelmingly either going to be asymptomatic and it just happened to get detected because you went into the hospital for something else or you got screened because you were exposed, or you're getting a mild illness. So again, these vaccines were never intended to completely prevent everybody from getting vaccinated. What they're intended to do is prevent you from getting severely ill, being hospitalized, being on a ventilator, or dying. And they are doing a really good job at that.
Dr. Hill, Janet wrote in. She says, what is your recommendation if you have had COVID in the last month and you were told you had the Delta variant? She says, my brother-in-law was told he only needs one COVID shot, for example, of Pfizer.
Gemma, I have not seen any recommendation from any expert body or published study that at this point would say that a single dose of a vaccination, except for the Johnson & Johnson, would be appropriate after getting the infection. And we clearly know that one immunization of the two-shot series only provides a partial protection. And truly, to have the full protection, you need both doses of the two-shot series or a single shot of the Johnson & Johnson. So I certainly wouldn't advise or recommend that one shot is adequate after having COVID. I would encourage, as I did, and I did go through COVID, is follow through with my second immunization as well.
Dr. Nemerson, I'm getting to the question here. Helen says that her son had COVID months ago and he still has extreme fatigue. So she wants to know if her son should get vaccinated.
Absolutely, Gemma. We talked about this just a moment ago. If you've had COVID, you should still get vaccinated. And fatigue is not a contraindication to receiving the vaccine. But I do have a concern, Gemma, that her son may be developing into a COVID long hauler. And that's one of the things we haven't talked about today is there's the deadliness of the virus. There's the acute illness that we've been talking about, and you survive that. But some number of people end up being long haulers, and fatigue is one of those symptoms that can go on. People have had it now throughout the length of the pandemic, having gotten COVID early. So she should get him to a doctor to get checked out for other signs of COVID long haul disease, which may not be curable, but at least are treatable so that he doesn't get more injury to parts of his body that could then jeopardize his function when he gets older. But again, to answer the question directly, he should get his COVID vaccine for sure. And I'll mention one last thing, which is we've now seen cases of people who have been infected with COVID twice. They got the original strain, they survived it, and then they got infected with the Delta variant or another one of these mutant strains. And you can imagine that it's pretty debilitating the second time around. So yet another reason for getting that COVID vaccine if you've had COVID.
Gemma, this is Dr. Hill, if I may.
I've spoken to
a couple of patients who shared with me unsolicited that they were experiencing ongoing fatigue and weakness, shortness of breath. And after they got their vaccine, they noticed a marked improvement in their symptoms. I haven't seen that in literature or published evidence, but anecdotally, I've had several people comment that they felt they improved after being vaccinated from their ongoing symptoms of COVID.
And Dr. Hill, AR sent this in, and if you wouldn't mind answering, she says, my husband is being treated for cancer. He received his first Moderna vaccine prior to treatment, but got his second vaccine after chemo commenced. Is it worth it or important for him to get antibody tested? How do we go about, and then how would they go about doing that if that's a recommendation?
It's at this point, it's not a recommendation to go get an antibody test because we really don't know what to make of the result. We are seeing people who may have a low number but are adequately protected from COVID, and then there are people who have high numbers. So it's really not an indication to go get an antibody test to try to see, well, how safe am I? Additionally, some of the benefit of how the vaccine protects us is also because of how it prepares some of our body's immune system cells to react in the event that the virus does, we get exposed to it. And that's not going to show up in an antibody test. So it's not a recommendation to get tested. That individual is adequately covered with the two vaccinations. So I'm not even sure where I'd refer someone to do an antibody test at this point.
Mm. Dr. Pate, Dell wrote in and he says, do we have any data or information on the Delta Plus variant that's reportedly coming out of South Africa?
We do. We don't have a lot, but we do know that this so-called Delta Plus is essentially, it's a, what we call a sublineage of Delta. In other words, it's the Delta variant with an additional mutation. And it's a mutation that did come out of South Africa. And certainly it's concerning. However, the limited data that we have so far suggests that it's likely our vaccines are probably just as effective against it as they are Delta. So while it's something we're watching, we're taking a look at, and we'll certainly learn more about over the coming months, right now it's a concern, but probably no more of a concern than the Delta variant.
And Dr. Nemerson, I'm curious your thoughts on parents who are hesitant right now, who may have children over 12 and older. As I mentioned in the very beginning of today's program, Idaho has the fifth lowest rate of children 12 and older being vaccinated. And look, we know it's emergency usage. We know that's some reasons why some parents are concerned. In fact, that's why they're concerned about getting it themselves potentially. How do we get over this hurdle, especially as we are heading so close into school, and we know science is showing that the vaccine works?
Gemma, children are our most precious gift, and I have two, and both of them are of the age where they're able to get the vaccine, but I was confronted with the same exact decision. This isn't an experimental vaccine. We talk about the emergency use authorization, and that had to do with the amount of people that could be studied in a short period of time to determine that it was safe to give this vaccine. So that's been done, and these vaccines are out on the market. Now they've been administered to hundreds of millions of people in this country with very, very rare complications. And particularly in children, we're not seeing issues of significant concern. We could talk about the rare side effects that have been of concern, but we're talking about one in a million kinds of things, as opposed to the risk of even a child acquiring this virus, where the risk of getting sick and severely injured from COVID is measured in the one in a thousand range. So there's no question that this vaccine is protective against the deadly effects of the virus in children specifically. And then the other thing is that the goal here is to use accurate information so that parents can feel confident that they're making the right decision to protect their kids. And we've just spent the past hour making that very, very clear. Other perturbations of the information that's out there, it's just sad. And, you know, I don't understand why, but it seems like the trusting relationship between people and their doctors has evaporated in some cases. But I hope for those that still have a trusting relationship with their doctor, they feel like they can pick up the phone, call that office, go in and see the physician, have a conversation, and emerge with the same degree of confidence that I hope I'm being able to share here.
And, you know, as I've said before, as a parent, I implore all of you to get yourselves vaccinated. If you're able to get your child vaccinated, get vaccinated. The science shows it works. I want to thank all three of you for taking an entire hour to talk with us today. Really appreciate everything that you have done, your expertise, but also scientific information, the facts. Thank you to Dr. David Pate, Dr. Stephen Nemerson, and Dr. Bart Hill. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thank you, Gemma.
And I want to thank all of you for being a part of Idaho Matters today. Our producers are Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.